They can be a great people color, they wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 47 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that fights crime by day and turns tricks at night. I'm Richard Gray.
And I'm David McVeigh. Richard, how are you?
I am on top of the world for a reason that we will share in just a moment.
Oh, yeah.
But in this issue, you can look forward to Bendis teasing Spider-Man 2 and Scully and Mulder getting impaneled. Also, Sin City gets its dame to kill for, Ridley Scott mines the management, and the Inhumans and Superman both get animated, plus our kick-ass pick of the week, The Pro, by Garth Ennis, Amanda Connor, and Jimmy Palmiotti.
Now, we're going to throw in a disclaimer right here early on in the show.
Definitely.
That this is, as a change of pace, we're still not going to carry an explicit tag, but be warned, there may be some expletives just by the very nature of the comic book that we are doing.
The following podcast contains adult content.
So, kids, if you're in the room, it's time to close your ears.
Now, David, in this bit where we normally exchange pleasantries, which we will do, we can do
I
that.
I thought we
now.
were.
I've also got to plug something. The reason we're on top of the world at the moment is that just before recording this interview, we just got off the phone to Canada where we interviewed the very, very lovely Jeff Lemire, who has is about to, this week, will be releasing his first issue of Green Arrow. But you'll also know his name from things like Sweet Tooth, Animal Man, and his graphic novels like Underwater Welder and Essex County. And a little bit of a teaser for that interview sounds a little something like this.
You were just on the topic of that grounding of the character. I know you've mentioned Mike Grell and Bendis and Miller's respective takes on Daredevil. Does this mean that your run will see a sort of a return to the urban hunter, Ollie, that we've seen?
Yeah, that's the only version I had any interest in doing, you know, so that was sort of right away what I pitched, like definitely a return to the Mike Grell era of this really, you know, this hero of the gutters, this hero of the street, really, you know, urban hunter, you know, basically kind of character. So that's really what I was after. And, you know, the Mike Grell stuff really holds up quite well, actually, when you read the whole run that he did. Some really amazing character work in there. And that's really what inspired me was that. And also Denny O'Neill's Question comics from the 80s.
Yeah.
I really love those. And then more recently, stuff like Bendis's run on Daredevil and, you know, some of the more recent Batman stuff. And just these really kind of street level superhero stories that were successful. And it's the kind of thing I'm trying to tap into without ripping those guys off, you know.
He was incredibly gracious with his time, and that full interview will be up in a couple of days now. So by the time you hear this, a couple of days later, that interview will be up on the same feed. So look forward to that.
It's a very good. We cover things. We cover Green Arrow, of course. We cover his work with the rest of the New 52 for DC. Also some of his solo stuff that he's doing for Top Shelf Publications and other people like Underwater Welder, and his thoughts on the comic book industry generally, and where he sees the future of graphic novels.
It's a little bit like a Jeff Lemire week, actually, because we're going to have Green Arrow coming out this week. We've got the interview coming out this week. And on our next episode, we'll actually be talking about Underwater Welder. So,
which is an excellent book. Go and get that now.
So we'll give you pre-warning. Go buy it now.
Definitely worth one adding to your shelf. But David, as always, we couldn't go a single week without doing our very special vintage clip of the week. And see if you can pick where I picked this one from.
Voilà, merci. To this night, you are so totally captivating. Let me make love to you.
Why?
Because your eyes reach into
my... You misunderstood me. I didn't mean why should you want to. I meant why should I?
Don't you find me attractive? Appealing?
Yes. But there are quite a few attractive and appealing men in this world.
I don't care about the others.
Oh, George. You don't.
You're fast. I like you.
Thank you. Now, if you'll excuse me.
There's no reason to run away.
Oh, I know that, George. Good night. Special line A, 1267 to the United States, operator. Merci. Mr. Steve Trevor.
Trevor.
You sound tired, Steve.
Oh, this has been a tough one, but you did pick the right dentist, the Frenchman. The English dentist is in a hospital in Belgrade, and the other one is on a long vacation in China. How's it going?
Somewhat involved, but I'm making progress.
You want me to send you some company for moral support?
No, everything's fine.
We all miss you, Dee. We did hear about the delivery we have to make. A messenger will be here to pick it up.
Will you tell who the messenger?
I like you.
Why?
Let me guess. Would that be from the 1974 pilot with Kathleen Crosby as Wonder Woman?
Oh, you're good.
I happen to have that.
For those of you not in on the joke, 1974, there was an unaired Wonder Woman pilot where it was very, very...
It's sensational.
It is. It's an incredibly different take. She's not in the star-spangled outfit.
No, she looks like she's a cheerleader.
Yeah, she's kind of got this like red, almost athletic jumpsuit thing going. and it's more the super spy take, which they have sort of done in the comics as well. So... Look, very, as you heard, very 70s.
Yes. It's for those who don't know, Kathleen Crosby went on to be a morning TV personality where I think it suited her better than being an actress. if you hunt around, you can kind of dig this one up.
There's the whole pilot's on YouTube. So just have a look there.
It is very different to Linda Carter.
It was meant to be, and it is kind of a little bit like sort of Emma Peel in the Avengers, the non-comic Avengers, the British Avengers. So that's kind of the feel they were going for. But of course, a year later, the Linda Carter one was out, sort of defining what Wonder Woman is.
Well, and went back to more of a traditional Wonder Woman, took it back to World War II and all that sort of stuff. And I think that was kind of where it was supposed to be.
But it's amazing how many failed pilots there have been for Wonder Woman over the years.
And there may be another one yet. We don't know what's happening with Amazon.
Yeah, well, I can't remember quite whether I've got it in the show notes. No, I think I've taken it out this week, but just while we're on the topic, they've pushed back Amazon, which is the new Wonder Woman pilot, sort of keeping in line with what CW were doing with Green Arrow by calling it Arrow rather than Green Arrow. Wonder Woman is now Amazon because, you know, everyone will know what that is. And they think they'll tune into a show where they can watch people ordering books.
Yes.
But that's been pushed back to the fall 2014 season. So whether or not that's going to be trying to tie in with their Justice League efforts in 2015 or whether it's going to be a completely standalone thing, we don't know yet. But the rumors are that Arrow and Wonder Woman, well, Amazon will be tying into.
And as we've said before on this show, I think DC is basically kicking themselves because at one point they did have Joss Whedon working on a Wonder Woman movie, which was kiboshed. And now, of course, he's turned into the billion-dollar superhero man. So DC must just be kicking themselves over this.
Well, while we're talking about TV, let's talk about what we've been reading and what we've been watching.
Cool.
Well, looks like we got ourselves a reader. Read between the lines, bitch.
Yes, indeed. Read between those lines. Okay, well, I'll start off with, unsurprisingly, because we interviewed Jeff Lemire this week, I have been reading a lot of Jeff Lemire stuff. I read the run of Sweet Tooth because I hadn't caught up with that before, and so I've read that. Really, really enjoyed it. Like, it's got a sort of Why the Last Man vibe. A little bit of Walking Dead in there as well, I think, because it's that whole post-apocalyptic setting, people walking across the world. But the reason Why the Last Man's a good touchstone is, apart from the fact that it's a DC Vertigo title, it's also got that sort of thing where you've got a small group of people traveling from one point in America to another. The ultimate goal is to get to Alaska. But there's also kind of biblical connotations and there's a little bit of mystical connotations there. And you start to get the backstory of all these people as you go throughout into
single
issues.
It also has that central character who's slightly out of the loop.
Yes.
Yeah. Whereas in Why the Last Man, you've got York, who's kind of being dragged along on the whole thing. And now we've got Gus.
And similarly, minor spoilers here, the final issue of both of them use a similar story motif. Definitely worth reading. It's 40 issues. It just finished up recently. We actually talked to Jeff Lemire about that in the interview about the end of that series. So, and he didn't end it because of his workload. He ended it because he said it came to a natural conclusion for him. So,
which is good to know.
Which is good. And, you know, it's a series that could have easily dragged on for another 12 issues or so, but he's sort of finished it where he thought was appropriate. Been reading that. Of course, read Underwater Welder in the last week, but we will talk about that in depth next week.
I think what we've been reading section is going to be kind of slim this week because we've been tied into the Jeff Lemire world.
And it's been less than a week since we've done a show because we're running a bit late with this episode. So
no, we're running late with the last episode. So this one we're trying to catch up.
So it's only been a week between recordings for us. But I've also, you know, I've been reading bits of DC, the New 52 stuff for the Batman stuff. But yeah, most of what I've been reading is Lemire because I've also read Underwater Welder and I've read some of his Animal Man stuff just to catch up on that because I'd fallen behind. But of course, on television, I caught up with the latest episode of Arrow, which is just getting magnificent. They introduced the Vertigo, the Count character, this week, which, as Green Arrow fans will know, is an old-school villain. But the way they introduced him is kind of this...
My son actually made the observation that he's very Scarecrow-like.
Yes, exactly what it is. Because Batman Begins was a big movie. For DC and Warner,
one of the big ones. Yeah. Minor indie film.
It got a few bit of attention from that indie director Christopher Nolan, and he's got a Scarecrow vibe to it, but he's also carving out his own thing. No spoilers, but where they end that episode, there's certainly room for him to come back.
Yes,
and be a recurring villain for Ollie, but also more importantly, they've set up two or three major things. They've set up Count Vertigo as a villain. They've set up Speedy being his sister Thea as a drug addict.
Yes.
They're really starting to solidify the computer geek's role as an insider assistant.
Which is much more of a New 52 thing. So yes. If anybody's read the Green Arrow New 52 issue, especially in the first, the first four or five.
Because they forget about it for a while.
They do. The first four or five, he's got basically a computer person talking in his ear the whole time, basically doing stuff for him. And all I could think was, as soon as I started watching Arrow, as soon as they introduced that little blonde, who I love, by the way, she's one of my favorite characters. I said, that's going to be her. They're going to have her sitting in his lair, and she's going to be feeding him information. You watch. And this week, we took a step closer to that goal. Now, this is not spoilers, people, because we don't have any insight. I don't know if that's actually going to happen, but that's my fan wish.
There has been some internet rumors, not just more than rumors, actually. They've actually sort of said that in a couple of episodes coming up, she will play a major part. And it'll be a major part with a major villain as well. So looking forward to seeing that. Look, we've got a lot to look forward to. I think we've got the Return of the Huntress coming up. We've got
Diana Lance
coming up, and that'll be played by, spoilers, sweetie, Alex Kingston from Doctor Who. And also the introduction of Roy Harper. Cotton Hayes will be playing Roy Harper, who comic fans will know was the original Speedy and is the current Arsenal.
Yeah.
So very much looking forward to this sort of tying into the mainstream DCU as well as carving out its own niche on television. David, what have you been reading?
Well, aside from all the Jeff Lemire stuff, of course, which I've got to say, Underwater Welder, which we're going to talk about in the next issue, is a must read. So everybody, I can't stress how much everybody has to go out and read this.
It's a reasonably priced, about $20 graphic novel. Go out and get that Underwater Welder by Jeff Lemire. Yeah. It's top shelf publications.
I think the best way to describe it at this point is to say that, and we say this in the interview as well, in the introduction pages, which is written by Damon Lindelof, he actually describes it as the greatest Twilight Zone episode never produced. And I think that is just fantastic and sums it up perfectly. The other thing I've been reading, though, that I bring up very quickly is a short run series called Superbia, which is basically a boom comic that is in four issue bites. So they're in the second run at the moment. So they're in volume two at the moment. I've only read volume one so far. But basically, it proposes the idea of superheroes. This is their wives. So basically, they have their own little suburb, which is like a gated community, so they can all be protected. And the secret lair of the superheroes is actually under the suburbs. And this is the story of the partners. in
so suburbia. It's like Desperate Housewives.
It's like Desperate Housewives, but for the superheroes. And it's really, really fun. And I when I first heard about it, I went, oh, I don't know about this. And my son actually said, look, can we get this? Because I want to have a look at it because he's been reading about it. So I got it, and it was really good.
The writers or artists, anyone?
Off the top of my head, it's one writer off the top of my head. Give me a second. I will tell you. Sorry, I was unprepared.
Sorry, I should plan out the questions I'm going to ask you.
No, actually, it just came to mind. But I will have it for you in a second. But basically, one of my favorite concepts in this book is that it's Grace Randolph is the name of the writer, and the artist by Russell Dalterman. One of my favorite parts of this is because they're all analogies to real superheroes, of course, as these things do, just like in Irredeemable or Incorruptible or what have you. They're not the real superheroes, but they are very, very close in similarity. There's a Superman analogy in it who I really like because he's basically taken to this little gorgeous blonde ex-villain who he has got the hots for, and so he's basically squirreled her away in the suburbs with the and nobody trusts her, nobody likes her, but she's basically saying I've redeemed myself and I'm a good person now. But basically it's just his squeeze that he keeps away, which is quite fun because we also have the Lois Lane type character that he's also talking to, so there's the Superman character isn't quite as lily pure as we may think he is.
Grace Randolph, for those who aren't following her at the moment, you can find her on Twitter at Grace Randolph, and I've just found out she's also the creator and host of Beyond the Trailer and Think About the Ink.
Oh, really?
So she's definitely one of us.
Fantastic! And this is it's a good comic. It's not stellar brilliance, but it is. The artwork is really nice, and the writing is actually very clever. I do like the fact that there's a subplot currently going, which is the Wonder Woman analogy, I guess you'd say. She's some sort of Amazon-type woman who the birthright of her powers basically passes on to her daughter. But she's had two children, and one of them is a boy, and he's basically ignored completely all the time by the woman, by the Amazon, because, of course, he's a boy, and it doesn't matter. But as it turns out, and this is minor spoilers, the boy may be the one who inherited the powers, not the daughter, and this is causing grief amongst the suburbs. So it is an interesting read. As I say, it's very quick. It's only four issues for the first volume. We're up to the third issue in volume two at the moment. Go out and have a look at it. It's on Comixology, I believe, so you can actually pick it up digitally as well. So
excellent. Well, she's someone who looks contactable as well, so we might have
to. Yes, I think we might have to talk to Grace.
Excellent. All right, David. even though we just spoke about this before the show, that I'd never say this, but moving right along, let's have a look at some of this.
What a scoop!
As always, it's time for comics news on Behind the Panels. Now, first story is from Brian Michael Bendis, straight from the horse's mouth.
The man.
who's been teasing a lot of things on his Twitter stream this week. You pointed out to me that he teased the artwork from, I think, issue 2 or 3 of Guardians of the Galaxy, which has got this great shot of Rocket Raccoon.
Currently my wallpaper on my phone, mind you.
But he's also, someone asked him if Spider-Man 2 was planned, and he said yes.
Oh.
So we're looking forward to a second series of that. I quite enjoyed that.
So did I.
I really hadn't read the Ultimate Spider-Man run since the new character had taken over from Peter Parker, which is an interesting fact. We don't have an original Peter Parker in either the Ultimate or the mainstream Marvel Universe at the
moment. All I'm going to say at that is read Superior Spider-Man.
Yes, well, yeah, I'm aware of what's happening, but Peter Parker, as we know him,
All I'm going to say is read Superior Spider-Man.
Oh, right, David. Fine. That's just a little bit of
for those who are out there, read Superior Spider-Man. All right.
Meanwhile, there's the over the X-Files is getting comic book form.
Haven't they been in comic book form before, though?
Yeah, this one seems to be a little bit different. Matthew, and I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, Matthew Kotusiak. Matt.
Hello, Matt.
Matthew K, as I'll call you from now on, so I don't horribly mispronounce pronounce your name. His IDW has announced that they're going to be doing an X-Files comics. He just mentioned that on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/behindthepanels, in case you're wondering.
And everybody should go and like that right now.
Like it, because we put up other stuff that's not related to the shows on there as well. We've put up things like the Iron Man 3 poster, for example, and just other bits and pieces that amuse us.
Hey, look, it's a lot faster to throw a couple things up onto the fan page than it is to go make a full post on the site.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, have we told people lately, is behindthepanels.net. But...
Was that behindthepanels.net, Dave?
Behindthepanels.net. So, yeah, if you like the fan page as well, you'll also get stuff that doesn't show up on the site. So there's a bit of crossover between the two.
Well, what they're doing is with this X-Files comic, apart from IDW and Fox have got a partnership where they're not only reprinting collections of the classics, but they're creating a brand new X-Files comics to launch in June 2013. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not sure if I'm just quickly running through this article to see whether or not it's a continuation. I imagine it's going to be a follow-on. I mean, we've had... it doesn't really go into a lot of details there.
It's the only way I can actually see it working is if it's a continuation.
Yeah, so I would imagine this is kind of going to be...
Season 11.
Yeah, something like that. Because we've had a feature film since then, which sort of came out of nowhere.
Did you see the feature film?
I did.
I actually didn't mind it, but my problem with... What was it called? Dare to Believe? No, I Want to Believe. I Want to Believe, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. My problem with that film was the fact that I felt like it didn't need to be an X-Files film. It was actually a decent thriller that didn't need Scully and Mulder. It could have been
It had Billy Connolly as a pedophile.
Which I quite liked. I thought he did a good job. But I just felt like it didn't feel like X-Files. It just felt like a crime procedural. And as a crime procedural, it was pretty good, you know?
And, I'll look forward to it. We'll have a read of it when it comes out.
Because
I was a big X-Files fan back in the day, and it'd be nice to see it live again somewhere. Speaking of things living again, video game fans will be pleased to know that they can pitch their favorite DC characters against each other and beat the living snot out of each other, whether you want to play Green Arrow fighting Superman. Not quite sure how that's going to work.
Kryptonite arrows,
that's exactly what you're going to do. But Injustice, Gods Amongst Us, is coming out soon. There's also a comic book tie-in for this, which is written by Tom Taylor, an Australian writer who's written The Deep, and it's something that we're going to look at some stage in the near future.
Definitely.
Someone else who I wouldn't mind having a chat with. He's a Melbourne.
Well, you're in interview mode now.
I am now. Look, now that we've captured our. If there's other people you'd like us to pursue, again, hit us up on the Facebook or feedback.
Because as it turns out, they want to talk.
Comic book creators, very lovely. If we're going to use Jeff Lemire as our example. Comic book creators are the most lovely people in the world. but here was a little clip from the brand new story trailer from Injustice Gods Amongst Us, which is basically sort of a Mortal Kombat type thing for the DC heroes, but finally we get to see them fighting each other.
I can see the headline. Justice League fails. Cloud kills millions.
It made sense at first. Bad people got what they deserved. But now, it's going too far.
Man's world is incapable of self-rule. We will preserve order.
Hands up, bat freak!
I'm in a nightmare.
Gotham and Metropolis will be history.
No. We have an alternative.
May fortune favor the foolish.
Get your people into position. Occupy any law enforcement you can.
I'm on it.
Well, look what I found. Time to end the insurgency.
And me without my camera.
This is Batman, Code Red.
It's payback time.
I'm so in. I'm going down to pre-order my copy today.
Yeah, no, I've already got mine pre-ordered. That's coming out April 16th in North America and April 19th in Europe on PS3, Xbox, and Wii U.
For those who haven't seen the trailer yet and just heard that bit of audio, the visuals in it look a lot like Arkham City.
I think it is a Rocksteady.
It looks fantastic, and all the superheroes are in these new costumes that are all kind of armored up and looking very badass. So.
Yeah, no, look, I'm definitely looking forward to that one. Just for the excuse, I mean, I've been playing. I've come back and been playing Marvel vs. Capcom 3, just by virtue of the fact that I can have a team in there that consists of Rocket Raccoon, Nova, and a Super Skrull, and or She-Hulk if I prefer to fight. You know, Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney. You know, it's just that's a lot of fun. And there was also a couple of years ago, there was a DC versus Mortal Kombat,
yeah,
which wasn't great.
Well, it wasn't because you also sit there and go, okay, I'm Superman, but I'm limited in powers because I've got to be the same powers as Guile or something that, you know? And so you sit there and go, that's not quite right. But now we can actually pit Superman versus, you know, I'm assuming like Supergirl or Power Girl or what have you, Wonder Woman. You know,
it's one of those things. I think the powers are there, but I mean, I think Superman's limited again.
Oh, they're always going to be slightly limited, but you're going to have heat vision and you're going to have, you're going to have control.
From that trailer, there's some amazing stuff that's going to happen. I think this is the game we've wanted for a while.
Now we just need this as well for the Marvel Universe and we're in business. What we actually need is Marvel versus DC.
That would be really cool. I am looking forward to, speaking of video games, the Marvel Superheroes Lego.
Yes.
Which, from what I understand, it's going to have everyone. It's even going to have Guardians Lego, which I'm really looking forward to.
Well, and after Batman 2, DC Universe, where you could play Superman throughout the whole game and fly over the entire city, it's just awesome. And the music even changes. So when you actually play the Batman 2, you change to the Superman character, immediately kicks into John Williams' score, and you lift off into the sky, and it's like, oh, yes, this is fantastic.
No, look, those Lego games are just getting better and better.
David,
I think it's time, without any further ado, that we have a little bit of this. That would signal time for movie news.
You've stolen all my soundboard clips.
Sorry, David. I'll let you do the pick of the week.
Okay.
I was just a little too quick on the trigger today. Something I'm often accused of. We did say this was an adult content
show. It's the book that's coming up,
people. Oh, absolutely.
It's the book that it raises all sorts of
David,
bad
David, all I can say is, for God's sake, move your head. speaking of which, of head, I don't know, Eva Green.
All I'm going to say about Eva Green is
very beautiful woman. We'll remember her as Vespa Lynn in Casino Royale.
No, I actually remember her as Morgana in the short-lived Camelot series.
Definitely, but beautiful woman.
Yes.
Also beautiful is Ava Lord in Sin City, A Dame to Kill For. So it's only right that Eva Green, in a perfect bit of casting, is playing Ava Lord in Sin City, A Dame to Kill For.
Eva playing Ava.
It makes so much. It's obvious now.
It is.
For years, this was rumored as being someone like Angelina Jolie, who also would have been fantastic. Yes. People like that. But she's got this sort of sexy, noirish, seductress, femme fatale thing going for her. Perfect bit of casting.
The dark, smoky eyes,
So very much looking forward to that whenever Rodriguez gets to that. He's probably got that.
He started shooting.
He's got that coming out. He's got Machete 2 coming out. And, I don't know, probably another Spy Kids film.
I love Rodriguez. As much as I love Rodriguez, I'm a big Rodriguez fan. He really needs to calm down on the kids' films.
Yeah.
Because they're not his strong point.
No.
You know?
But, you know, it's probably one of those things that he has to do to get funding for the other
films. Also, or alternatively, keep making the kids' films, but stop letting his kids write them.
Yeah, there's that as well.
You know, so, sorry, Rodriguez. I love you, Robert.
We love you like the father that we never had. I don't know.
Well, something in my case, that might be true. But anyway.
Well, me too, for that matter.
There you go.
He's probably a little young to be my father, but still, I've never met him. It's in a parallel universe. It could be true.
Cool.
There you go. Mind Management.
Pardon?
Mind Management. It's a Dark Horse book by indie darling Matt Kint, as the Hollywood Reporter phrases it. Ridley Scott's picked up the producing rights to put that out via Scott Free. And along with, according to the article, Dark Horse Entertainment's Mike Richardson and Keith Goldberg. So this is great to see another non-cape comic book being adapted to the screen. I think it's great that more of these happen. And as we discovered, and I'm going to reference it again, our interview with Jeff Lemire, who does a lot of non-capes books, that there are certain stories that do just lend themselves to the to the comic book format. And what was interesting in that interview, and you'll hear that in the special that goes out later this week, about how he says there are certain things you can only do in a comic book, which is great, and something that, you know, Alan Moore used to say as well. Mm-hmm. He said in years from now, Hollywood will be coming. It was either Alan Moore or Frank Miller who said in years from now, Hollywood will be coming to us for inspiration. Yes. We won't be trying to copy Hollywood. That's exactly what's happened in the last 10, 15 years. Now, according to the article, this mind management centers on a government agency consisting of psychic spies and their greatest asset, Henry Lime. After he suffers a breakdown and loses control of his abilities, causing the populace of a town to kill one another, he goes on the run. Several years later, a true crime author named Maru, who was part of a flight where everyone mysteriously developed amnesia, is saved by Lime and begins to investigate the agency, uncovering her own secret connection to it. And it sounds good. They're still searching for a writer. But very much looking forward to that. They mentioned a few other properties that are in the works in this thing as well.
Looking forward to Ridley Scott doing something decent again.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's directing, but
he's producing, I think.
I would really like Ridley Scott to get back to former glories, because it hasn't been a good couple of years with Robin Hood and Prometheus.
Mm.
So it would be nice to see him actually really kind of put something on the table that we're proud of again.
It's interesting that Dark Horse has also got another adaptation coming up, RIPD, which is an adaptation of one of its own properties, and it's gonna be out July 19th this year, and it's gonna have Ryan Reynolds and Jeff Bridges in it.
Jeff Bridges, sorry.
Love Jeff Bridges.
I love Jeff Bridges. Sorry, dude. It's just the literal trailers, you know, where they sing the songs that are the literal trailers. When they do the Tron Legacy one, the guy actually goes, Jeff Bridges.
I saw him being interviewed on, it was either Stephen Colbert or Jon Stewart recently, and he's promoting a book called The Dude and the Zen Master, and it's out. He's basically, because after the Big Lebowski, Jeff Bridges became the dude.
He did, very much so.
And bless him for doing so, because if you look at Tron Legacy, he is the dude.
He's the dude glowing.
Yeah, and he's basically got this philosophy book where at the end of it, Jon Stewart said, I'm going to have to watch the show tonight because I want to find out what that interview was about. So I'm looking forward to seeing
Although I will say that the one time that he hasn't been the dude lately was in True Grit, which was an amazing performance.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, on the most part, he's the dude.
Yeah. And we love him for it.
Absolutely.
And other movie news coming up. This is kind of movie news. DVD release, Marvel animation, Marvel Knights animation, you know, has been that kind of motion comic stuff.
They're like a hybrid between a comic and a motion comic. I saw the Spider-Woman one.
It's not great, but one of the ones they've plugged, and it's coming out on the 23rd of April, is the Inhumans series. And I know you've got this one on your bookshelf, David.
I do.
It's that 12-issue Marvel Knights Inhumans book. Quite a good run, so it'd be good to see some voices put to it anyway. Mm. I mean, you know,
except for
Black Bolt, yeah. You don't really need a voice for that, no. But another one that is very exciting, because we spoke about the Dark Knight Returns Part 2, the magnificent Dark Knight Returns adaptation, and DC Animation is wasting no time in getting stuck into a Superman adaptation. We've, of course, got a big Superman movie coming out next year, Man of Steel, but in between, now and then, we've got Superman Unbound coming out later this year, which is a bit of a Brainiac story.
You forgot its subtitle. It's the Man of Steel Greatest Catch Edition.
Greatest. Yeah, I love that scene in Man of Steel where he comes out with a giant sea bass.
Yes, that's right.
And he says to Pa Kent, should I have caught more? And he says, maybe.
Maybe.
So here's a little clip from Superman Unbound.
Kara.
It was only a couple of months ago.
Tell me.
We were helpless. Our army threw everything we had at them, but they were unstoppable. No!
You've seen these before.
A lot of them.
On Krypton?
In Kandor, the capital, the day it disappeared.
A whole city disappeared.
It calls itself Brainiac.
I am flesh and machine. I am the strength of 10,000 worlds.
These probes must be how he searches for planets.
If that thing's here, it's all going to happen again.
No, we can beat him. Millions of lives, they all need to be freed.
Go!
You have already failed. Soon, Earth will be mine.
We'll see about that.
Such a savage world.
It gives me strength. Welcome to Earth.
I'm sorry, it may be the fact that we're doing the Pro as our book this week, but I don't think flesh, man made of flesh and steel, or flesh and whatever it is, plus probes should be mentioned in the same sentence.
I always wondered what these probes were
for. While we're doing this particular show. I'm sorry, I almost died laughing when I was listening to that trailer. That wasn't even funny.
I can vouch for that. David did almost die laughing. We had to resuscitate him. Now, that's not the only trailer that came out this week. As those of you in the US will know, and probably around the rest of the world as well, there's been this little Super Bowl thing out. And there's usually a few ads that have been out around that time.
Oh, just a few ads.
Super Bowl or the Superb Owl, if you prefer.
Superb Owl.
Depending on how you're reading that. Iron Man 3 is a film coming out in April.
I hadn't heard about that one.
Yeah. What? It's coming out in late April here in Australia. We're getting
Who's in that?
No one you've heard of.
No.
There was that guy who had a big drug problem in the 90s.
Oh,
and yeah,
right.
A, yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay.
So, yeah, he's not really done anything since. But, yeah, it's coming out in late April here in Australia, a week before the US, suckers. Which means we'll probably get whatever the next one is 2 weeks later.
So this is the sequel to this one.
Tony Stark makes you feel he's a cool exec with a heart of steel.
That one,
it,
right?
It directly follows on from the 60s series. That's why it's called Iron Man 3, because it's a, yeah. So without any further ado, if you actually get a chance to see this online, look it up, because it's we pulled this one from bleedingcool.com, the link's in the show notes, and it's the extended look edition with a bit of a visual gag at the start from Robert Downey Jr.
Which we've cut off because, of course, it doesn't translate, but it is worth having a look at.
Look at a bit, but here's a little bit of a teaser of this awesome video.
A lot of apologies to make. I'm so sorry I put you in harm's way. You gotta find out who did this.
You'll never see me coming.
How many in the air, Jarvis?
13, sir.
How many can I carry?
4.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I had to clean up a little bit.
I'm kind of looking forward to it. Look, you know, Iron Man has... You know, Iron Man 2 wasn't brilliant, but it was still a good...
And I'm in the camp where I actually really enjoyed Iron
Man 2. Look, I really enjoyed Iron Man 2, and actually when I watched it again recently, in the lead-up to the Avengers, I watched all the Marvel films again. And I actually enjoyed Iron Man 2 a lot more a second time around in the context of the rest of the series than I did when I saw it back in cinemas. Because I think Iron Man 1 was so good, so surprisingly good, that we didn't think it was going to be as awesome as it was when it came out. So Iron Man 2, look, Iron Man 2 had still had problems.
I admit that. Look, it had a few problems because it really was just trying to set up other films.
And that's exactly it.
And that was its problem. But, however, that being said, it was so much fun to watch. It was fun to watch his meltdown. Yes, there were problems. Yes, how did Whiplash survive being hit by a car when he's not really wearing armor? You know, there's all sorts of little logistics issues. All sorts of... But aside from all that, it was still a damn good superhero film.
And look,
you know?
That final thing with Rhodey and
The robot fight at the end when Black Widow walks in and takes out all the guards in that hallway is a standout moment. Where she walks into the boxing ring.
Yeah,
you know, and they say, "Oh, you know, will you spar with him?" And she beats the crap out of Happy, you know. And it's Happy, is that the word I'm looking
Happy,
for?
Yeah,
yeah, Happy, that's the word. Yeah, yeah. These are great moments,
you know.
And even those, as silly as it is, moments like when he's trying to discover the new element and stuff like that.
Actually, that was a really good sequence. I really liked it.
With the map and, you know, putting the grid over the top and trying to get
and that whole sort of faux Disneyland thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The expo map and all sorts of. So I really enjoyed Iron Man. Too, I can understand that it's not as good as the first one, but I think it is a good film. And I think as part of the five films leading up to the Avengers,
yeah,
I think it's a great addition. I think it really fits in nicely.
You know? Look, you know, exactly. It's part of that saga. And I think everything we look at now in the future of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is going to have to be within the context of the rest of the cinematic universe. I think we're all in now. Like, yeah, I think
I'm in both.
I think
feet,
all
both
cinema
arms.
Audiences are just all they need to do is put, you know, that Marvel logo on there, and we're like, right, sign of quality, and let's just jump on board. So excited about that. We've got a little bit of feedback before we move on to our pick of the week.
Oh, cool.
This
all
week.
Right.
The first bit of feedback actually comes as through the magic of post-production. Or David, can you drop in a bit of Girl from Ipanema here at all?
I might even have it on the soundboard. if I actually dig through here, I could say...
There we go. This comes from Matthew White. Hi, Dave and Richard. I know I'm behind the times, but a friend has just lent me all the seasons of The Walking Dead, and I have to say, I wish this wasn't on Foxtel in Australia, so I could watch it. Now I may have to acquire it through iTunes. Anyway, now I'm interested in possibly reading the comics. I would like to read them from my iPhone. This music's so relaxing.
It makes Isn't it just, it's just like, I can just snooze away now. So.
Basically, he wants to read them from his iPhone or iPad, so what would be the best app and place to get them, or the cheapest price, and it's free if possible, if better. Or if not, digital quality, etc., etc. Hope to catch up with you guys soon in Feb, etc. Matthew. Matthew, I'm glad you came to us with this question. If you want to get these are actually available in a number of different ways. You can get them as individual trade paperbacks. You can get them in these massive, massive compendiums. I'm not sure if they're available in Australia in those compendiums, but certainly in the US stores, you can buy a lot of that stuff in almost any digital format. Comixology has got them all,
yeah,
as far as I understand.
Yeah, if you're an iPad user, this is the app for everybody.
And Image has got its own app as well. Regularly find them on sale fairly cheap, particularly the earlier issues. They're always trying to push that. So thank you, Matthew, for contacting us with a question. We have a second little bit of feedback, David, while you've got the music playing.
I think it's going to be a regular section now.
So don't forget to write in to facebook.com/behindthepanels.
Or feedback@behindthepanels.net.
Now, our good friend Mike Wheeler, Mike from Canada, has sent us in on the back of David's comments last issue, or possibly the issue before, about Blade Trinity. And he found this article online that he wanted to share with us from Patton Oswalt, gets brutally honest about the failures of Blade Trinity. And I love this article because he talks about... Patton Oswalt says, there's a scene where Blade goes in and confronts this guy for harvesting humans. The scene was supposed to be the whole basis of the film. Blade is just fighting for the last shred of humanity, but they thought it was just so grim. I've cut out a swear word there. So they decided to just have Blade fighting Dracula. It was one of those. It was a very troubled production. But I like how he goes on and says, when he was talking about Wesley Snipes, he says, when I met him, I was like, hi. And he was like, I'm Blade. And also, Natasha Lyonne was on that set and she was going through some kind of mental breakdown. Wesley is all boundaries and she has no boundaries. She played a blind computer expert. So the first scene they had together, she's put her hand right on his face and he just recoiled. It was awesome. He says, Wesley Snipes was just so effing crazy in a hilarious way. He wouldn't come out of his trailer, so he would smoke weed all day, which was fine with me because I had all these DVDs I wanted to catch up on. And it goes on. Look,
I think my favorite part of this article is where he talks about the fact that Wesley would only come out for close-ups. Yeah. So the entire thing was made with body doubles.
But it says here, and Wesley came onto the set, which he only did for close-ups. Everything else was done by his stand-in. I'm only in one scene with him, but he comes on and goes, there's only one other black guy in this movie, and you make him wear a shirt that says, garbage, you racist MF. And then he tried to strangle director David Goyer.
Now, if you read it, earlier in the article, it actually talks about that particular scene, because Wesley wasn't on set, he didn't know, everybody was encouraged to wear their own clothes. So this was actually his shirt.
Well, it also says that a lot of the lines from Ryan Reynolds were just the result of Wesley not being there. So, like, great article. Links in the show notes. Go and check that out if you can.
Absolutely. It's really wonderful. It's great to hear from you, Mike, from Canada as well.
And you've just joined us for feedback at behindthepanels.net.
All right, back to the show, people.
Now, David, I've been hogging the soundboard the whole time. So, David, why don't you hit the next?
Would this be this one?
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Oh, it certainly is. The pick this week is The Pro, by Garth Ennis, Amanda Connor, and Jimmy Palmiotti. This is, to put it succinctly, this was a comic put out by...
Image?
Image Comics. It's kind of a parody of superhero. It's basically a parody of the DCU, where a prostitute gets powers given to her by a sort of a parody version of the Watcher, who the people who his offsider keeps calling the voyeur. he said, "Oh no, it's the viewer, who is looking at this prostitute doing her regular activities and decides anybody can be a hero. I'm going to give her powers." So in the week in the life or however long it is, he watches her completely stuff up being a superhero, but also trying to carry on her regular life as a prostitute and a mother, as a single mother.
And somebody who works at Denny's.
And someone who works at Denny's. the basic crux of the story is, joke of the story is that you've got this Justice League stand-in that consists of a Superman stand-in called the Spirit.
The Saint.
The Saint, rather, yeah. Not the Spirit. The Wasn't Saint.
The Saint or Saintly or something like that.
I think it's the Saint. You've also got...
well, I'll tell you what.
Why don't you play this clip? Yes.
I have a clip that actually has the introduction of these people.
And I don't have to remember the names.
No, that's right. So have a listen to this.
Greetings, comrade. Welcome to the fight. I am the Saint, and this is the Knight.
Because I'm always out there. In the dark.
His valiant young companion, the Squire.
Morning, ma'am.
And the lady. Together, we are the League of Honor.
Yeah, I think I saw you on TV. What, you can't knock on the door like normal people, huh?
Yes.
Okay, what is it you want exactly?
We've come to welcome you to...
Yeah, give me a second here.
You see... Whenever a new superhero arises... We gather to celebrate their joining the never-ending battle against evil and to offer them a place in the League.
Oh, what's that got to do with me? Oh, wait a minute. Do you mean the shit that's happened to me here? Is that what you're talking about? What the f*** is it? Who the f*** did it to me?
Well, we don't know any of the details, of course. But we can help you to channel this power that's awoken in you. We can show you a positive way to...
Jesus f***. Christ, you assholes want me to be one of you?
It is a hard road you must travel, sister. Alone, it will be all the harder.
I'm not your f***ing sister.
That's a lot of beeps.
Yeah. As you can see, we had to get fairly active on that one. That was actually, if you search for the pro Garth Ennis on YouTube, someone's put together a trailer for a Motion Comic version of it, which has done incredibly well, and I love those voices.
I love the voices. It's actually more than a Motion Comic, though. It is actually animated.
Yeah, and I don't know who did that, what purpose it was done for, whether it was a proposed Kickstarter. But if anybody knows, please let us know. But it's perfectly captures
and
the comic.
Funnily enough, it is actually better than the comic.
Yes,
because by putting voices to it and giving an emotional reading to it, it actually becomes funnier. Because one of the problems I had was that the humor fell flat on me in this book.
The humor in this book is really two jokes. One joke is that it's a prostitute with superpowers,
yes.
So you get to do a whole lot of innuendo there. The second joke is parodying the Justice League people. So as you heard, the Saint is a Superman stand-in. You've got the Knight and his, you know,
very faithful
ward, who's constantly grabbing him and clutching him and fondling him.
It's actually almost vaguely disturbing how much he's clutching and grabbing and fondling him.
And the lady, unsurprisingly, is the Wonder Woman stand-in. During their first fight, the pro complains about the underwear riding up her backside.
Because it's not her costume.
It's not her costume.
They've thrown the costume together from other people.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't fit properly and it's kind of dirty looking.
A bit like the pro herself.
Yes.
She ends up, the fight ends with her grabbing the one of the bad people by the breasts, throwing them down on the floor of the UN and urinating on her, which sort of gives the rest of the league,
the League of,
let's just call them the League. Let's
whatever.
Call them what
they are. The League, that'll do.
Gives the rest of the league cause for concern as to whether she might fit into their little group. Now,
League of Honor.
League of Honor, thank you. That's right, the League.
Yeah.
Gives a cause for concern whether or not she's going to fit in with the group, and which they really don't think she does. Of course, the Saint, being the consummate Boy Scout that he is, has never really had the pleasures of a Lady of the Night. And probably the only scene in this comic worth reading the thing for is a scene where she, and we told you this is going to get a little blue, people, a scene where she actually performs oral sex on the Saint, during which time he realizes he has no control over about what's to happen and tells her to move her damn head, where the resulting action clears her head but takes off the wing of a plane.
And shoots through the wall.
Through the wall, takes off the wing of a plane. He has to fly up and save the plane, but of course he's pantsless and somewhat still excited as a result of the action, causing disgrace and several children to be disturbed. And naturally the pro gets the blame for all of this. Now, she ultimately redeems herself. This is a very short comic. This is only about 50 pages. She ultimately redeems herself by saving the city from a nuclear bomb going off by taking into space before realizing that she's just stuffed herself as well in the process. And it ends rather abruptly at that point, yes. Just sort of saying, and, you know, children grew up as they probably should. And but there is, if you buy the later edition of this that was released, there's also another 12-page story in there called The Pro versus The Ho.
Oh, God help us.
Which was even more juvenile than the original one. They didn't even hold back as they did in the first one. It's a 12-armed woman who says, you know, you're not the only hooker who's got superpowers. All the Johns are complaining because she's like giving these lightning fast hand jobs, which last 2 seconds, but they're still getting charged full freight for it. So she says, I can do that with 12 arms, and I can do them as long and slow as you like, but I can do 12 customers at once. They have a smackdown, and it sort of ends predictably innuendo-y.
That one doesn't even really have an end.
No.
That's the problem. It just kind of, she throws her into the river, and then they have a talk, and it's over.
Yeah, but the main story doesn't really have a proper ending either. Unfortunately, this is one of those cases where it's a book that just has one joke and it doesn't really go anywhere. Truly, the only reason for reading this is as a curiosity. We picked it up because Samuel L. Jackson recommended it.
Well, we picked it for two reasons. One was Samuel L. Jackson made mention of it basically in an interview we saw once where he was saying that this was the greatest comic book ever written. And so we thought, okay, we'll have a look at this. But then we actually examined it further. We said it's written by Garth Ennis, who we all love as a writer from Preacher and so forth. Artwork by Amanda Connor, who, as anybody who listens to this show knows, is one of my favorites, did the Power Girl run. And so you sit there and you go, this has got to have quality.
Mm.
This has got to be something special. And then you pick it up and you go, oh, yeah, maybe not.
Yeah, look, juvenile writing, people who have read a lot of Garth Ennis won't be surprised by it, because for every, even within Preacher and his Punisher runs, there were moments where he went off the deep end. And this is kind of like all of those crazy ideas in one book.
Without the other stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because it's a one shot. That said, I don't think I could read this as an ongoing if it kept that tone.
Oh,
up.
No.
So I'm glad it was a one shot.
And it does have humorous stuff in it. Let's not completely rag out on it.
Well,
it's not
that one shot scene.
Well, that one shot scene, but there's also little things in it, like the fact that Batman, the Knight, his ward has got this. He's always depicted as having these hairy legs, and you've got his Robin guy always kind of like almost surrounding him. It's like he's always holding on to his legs, or he's holding on to his six pack. Or it's very oddly drawn. So you got those, you got these little moments in it throughout where you sit and go, that's actually kind of witty. It's like the arrival of the League when they first met, like the clip we just played, when they first arrive and how righteous they all are. And she's just like, oh yeah, go away.
It's like, I've probably seen you on TV.
There's moments like that in this where you go, yeah, that's kind of witty. But the problem is it doesn't fall together. And those moments would be really funny if you had something slightly more serious surrounding them, but it never pulls itself out of juvenile, is the word you use, which is perfect for it. It never pulls itself out of that juvenile, so those little witty moments fall flat because they're not given a framework to shine.
Yeah.
They're just weaved into the rest of it. Another thing, the bad guy's called adjective, verb, noun, and so forth because all the good names were taken.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really funny line.
Yeah.
But just,
I like that.
But
really
just wasted
that
on this.
I think it's because it struggles to find its audience. It's like there's a lot of in jokes there for comic fans, but it's going for this broad, smutty thing as well. It's full of fan service, and depending on, you know, which cover you get of this, you can see the tone that it's going for from the cover. Look, I can't say I can highly recommend this as a purchase or anything, but if you happen to have you know half an hour in a comic book store, just flick through it, you'll get the idea.
You know, I would actually say that if you're a real collector, it might be one to have as a curiosity.
It's not, it doesn't quite, like, there's a lot of over-the-top stuff in something like Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like feels like an inferior version of that.
Yeah, it does. It feels like they've gone, oh, Mark Millar got away with this sort of stuff. Let me see what I can get away with.
Yeah.
And they're not, and it actually, it's a, in a funny kind of way, it kind of makes you appreciate how clever Mark Millar is.
Mm.
Even when he's being at his most juvenile worst, there's still a sharpness to Mark Millar.
Although this was originally released back in 2002, so it's probably predates Kick-Ass by quite a few years.
Oh, that's a very good point. And you know what, though? And also, here's another thought for you. I'm just putting this out there. In 2002, this would have been seen as incredibly subversive.
Mm.
And nowadays, we look at it and go, oh, it's kind of silly. So time and place.
Yeah.
In 2002, this might have been like the most underground subversive thing there was. But yeah, as I say, in the world, in the modern age of Millar world, it's kind of just an anomaly.
There's still talk that they're going to adapt it as a film. I wouldn't mind if they did it in the style of that animation clip that we just played. That would be great. Connor and Palmiotti have both spoken about it at different times. I think Connor has said that she'd like to see Sarah Silverman play the role.
Oh, that I could actually get down with that.
And I think he's mentioned, I can't remember who mentioned Ellen Muth, or Muth, rather, it's pronounced, who people might recognize from Law and Order. She was in Dead Like Me. It's a Life After Death. She's been around a few. If you look at Dead Like Me, the series was probably what she was most famous for recently.
I love that series.
So you'd recognize her from that. Actually, looking at a picture of her on Wikipedia, she looks the role.
Yeah.
So I can see that as well.
And I would have Patrick Warburton doing the Saint.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Hands down.
Yeah, there's no question. If he does it as well as he does, the Tick, that'd be great.
And those hamburger commercials.
Yes. I don't know
if you've heard those. A Mouthful of the Denver.
I love Patrick Walton.
So do I.
But no, we can't recommend that one. But what we can recommend is next week's
pick. Nice segue.
highly recommended The Underwater Welder, which we've already mentioned, by Jeff Lemire. This one's out through Top Shelf Publications. We'll be looking at that, spoilers and all, next week. So do yourself a favor, go out and read that in depth.
I would also like to point out that this hasn't taken away my love of Amanda Connor, though, and I'm putting her on the interview list.
Oh, absolutely. I think we should definitely do that there. As you're probably wondering what's happening, it's now February. Our other podcasts haven't come back yet, so they will be coming soon. So you can always find this one on behindthepanels.net and, of course, geekactually.com.
For those who've never done podcasting, it does take a little bit of work to get them right.
Yes.
And we are trying to launch a whole big relaunch. So we've got this show still going. The sites are there. They're actually under construction. There is stuff behind the little construction sign that you guys can't get into yet, but they will be launching soon, so just bear with us. We are just a little bit behind schedule.
You'll hear about it here, or you'll hear about it on geekactually.com, so check
or
both
on
of those.
facebook.com/geekactually.
There you go. So there, find out all the latest on those places. We look forward to hearing from you at any of those places as well, and we'll see you right back here in 2 weeks time. Don't forget to check out our special edition interview with Jeff Lemire as well, also on this feed later this week.
Absolutely.
So David, as always, it's been a pleasure. Actually, David, it's...
You were wonderful.
But Richard, are we normal again?
We're normal again!
All right, everybody, thank you very much. We'll see you in a fortnight.
See you then, guys. Rocks!